Tapes and Scouts, a podcast where two friends review every single movie they watch.
Welcome, everybody, to Tapes and Scouts. How are you doing today? Are you doing well? Good to know.
On to the first film.
All right, here we go. My first film is called H.H. Holmes, America's First Serial Killer.
Oh.
It's from 2004.
Oh, that's the year I graduated high school.
Hey, look at you.
Yeah,
I graduated in 2000.
Did you?
I did.
In the year 2000?
In the year 2000. March 20th, I watched this. It's an hour four, so just barely a movie.
Yeah.
But I can't say it's not.
No.
Genre documentary crime history, directed by John Borowski, starring Tony Jay, Harold Schechter, and Thomas Cronin.
Officer Steve
Grabowski.
Your IMDb movie summary. Torture chambers, acid vats, greased chutes, and gassing rooms were just some of the devices of death designed by the torture doctor, H.H. Holmes, in his castle of horrors. Follow Holmes's entire life as a criminal mastermind.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's a wild description.
It is.
And largely true.
I feel like it's got at least 12 exclamation points in that description.
I mean, I add exclamation points to everything.
Nothing wrong with that.
That's right. My bullet points, largely photos and diagrams. Only real video is like talking to an expert. So it has like that classic CNN kind of documentary kind of vibe.
Absolutely,
to it.
Absolutely,
yeah. Or that awesome episode of Community.
Oh, yes.
It's a shitty guy who just moves to another part of the country and just completely changes his identity. Nope, I'm Bill now. Nope, I'm Ted now.
Oh. You know,
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or you could just say, I'm this, and people believed you, because why not?
Hi, Ted.
Hi. Inspired in part by the Jack the Ripper murders that were happening in England around the same time.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I could do that. I could do it better.
I can do that, too.
He bought a huge vault. This story's great. So he was a constant shitty con artist and a murderer.
Right.
But I don't know if he was a better con artist than he was a murderer.
Okay.
Because he was so good at both.
Right.
He bought this giant bank vault from the bank.
Interesting.
No intention of ever paying it off.
Huh.
He had it brought to his place, which was like this giant multi-story building. He had it installed, and he made sure the room was too small that it couldn't be taken back out.
Huh.
And then when they're like, you never paid, he goes, okay, take it back. And they physically can't.
Wow.
Yeah, he did all kinds of weird shit. And he would throw people in the vault and close it.
Dear God.
He gassed people. He's an awful human being. Children murdered. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
It is a tough documentary to get through when you realize just the level that this guy got through. But he is technically our first serial killer.
Yeah.
I kind of picked it because I watched it with... Yeah. I watched it with the mother-in-law and the wife, and I know they like
the true crime
stuff, but this is like, this guy's a bit much, so we'll see if they liked it or not.
Yeah.
They didn't. IMDb gives this a 6.3.
Okay.
Rotten Tomato critics, 75%, only 8 critics.
Okay.
The audience gave it 43%, 1,000 plus.
Okay.
I gave it a 6. I thought it was a good documentary.
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 He's documentary.
The wife gave it a 5.5. The mother-in-law gave it a 4. It's not what they wanted.
No.
I thought it was super interesting. I hadn't been aware of the guy, so learn a thing about some serial killers, I guess.
Yeah. No, they just wanted that, like, ID thing. He was a normal husband and father until he wasn't.
Yeah.
That's what they want.
He picked up the kids at the soccer practice.
Until he didn't.
So good.
Yeah.
Oh, ID Discovery.
Yep.
You are the bane of my existence. Go ahead, Max.
I'm sure it is.
Oh, boy.
I watched a movie from 2019.
Hey, that's recent.
Yeah. It's called The Wretched.
How wretched?
I don't know. We'll find out.
Ooh.
I watched it in September of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
It is 1 hour and 36 minutes long.
Okay.
It's a horror film directed by Brett and Drew Pierce.
Hey, the Pierce brothers.
The Pierces. We had double Pierces before.
That's right.
Now we have directing double Pierces.
Bringing it back.
Starring Piper Curda, John Paul Howard, and Zara Mahler.
I don't trust John Paul Howard.
Me neither.
Three first names.
Yeah, I don't like it. The movie summary. A defiant teenage boy struggling with his parents' imminent divorce faces off against an old witch who has possessed his next-door neighbor.
That's a weird combo of problems.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
My thoughts on this movie is it has some promising horror elements or some cool effects. There's some neat setups and scares and things. Like, it's pretty cool, but the cast is not very compelling. The lead male is, I don't like him. He's annoying. He just bothered me pretty much through the whole film. It's just like, I don't care about this kid. Is he dead yet? Like, just can you please kill him, please? Like, I just don't want this kid to live anymore. And he's annoying. And like, the people around him weren't great either. They're fine, better than him.
They're elevated by him.
Yeah, it's just not great. If they had a better main character and better dialogue, like, it's super generic. Like, I'm mad my parents are getting divorced. I hate divorced parents. You know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of generic. Like,
and the dumb witch next door won't turn her music down.
That's right.
Can't listen to 80s Madonna all the time.
No, this is ridiculous. How long does that cauldron have to bubble over there? Seriously.
Turn it down.
My God.
Bubble.
It's bubbling in frogs everywhere over there.
Trouble.
It's I wish it was better because there's a lot of things that are cool about it and promising, and it's not a bad film. Like, I did not enjoy it. It was all right. Just the kid, man. And like, the acting was not my favorite part, but like, the lighting was good. The actual filmmaking, it was thoughtful. It was well planned out. You could tell that they took their time to try to craft a thoughtful and interesting movie, but wasn't super into the lead actor.
It happens.
Yeah. IMDb gives us a 5.8 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes critics, 110 critics, surprisingly.
That's more than some of these great movies.
Yeah, exactly. 75%.
Okay.
Audience, 250 plus, give it a 46%. So some peaks and valleys going on here.
Yeah.
I am in the middle-ish again, 6 out of 10. Like, it's all right. It does more good than it does bad, but you're like, most of the work for these kind of movies are going to be your leads, and this lead is unlikable.
That's unfortunate. So the movie has to have some good parts for it to still get a 6.
Yeah, and it does. It does the tension. It does the effects. It does everything really well. It's just the kid, like, ruins it. Like, he literally got, like, if this kid was someone compelling in the writing and he had a little bit more to go on dialogue-wise and a little bit more content for him, like, you know, more fat to chew on,
sure,
this would easily be a 7.5 or an 8.
Wow.
Yeah, they really wrecked it.
Dang. You wreck me, baby. My next movie is from this year, 2021.
Oh, I've heard of this year.
It's Godzilla versus Kong.
Okay. Hang on a second.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm ready. I've watched this.
Yeah. I was very curious how you're going to feel versus how I felt about it. And I've really seen there's two camps about this movie. People who love it way too much and the people that are a little more realistic.
Okay.
But I'm sure you're way below me. I watched this on whenever it came out. IMDb minutes, 1 hour, 53 minutes. The genre is action-adventure kaiju. Directed by Adam Wingard.
Yes,
starring the Skarsgård, the Millie Bobby Brown.
A lot of guards.
Rebecca Hall.
Oh, I see.
IMDb summary, the epic next chapter in the cinematic monsterverse pits two of the greatest icons in motion picture history against one another, the fearsome Godzilla and the mighty Kong, with humanity caught in the balance.
Ooh.
What the fuck? It's a big monkey fighting a lizard? Like, come on, man.
I played Rampage.
Yeah, this is Rampage. Except it's not Rampage. I'm sure that'll come up at some point because there's a wrestler in it, so I'm obligated.
Right? That is your rule.
That's my rule. Bullet points. The battles are fun to watch and large in scope. The human characters suck, except the little girl who knows sign language. Everybody else, awful. Well, I guess the woman isn't bad, the scientist woman. She's okay.
There's nothing to her, though.
Sure.
That's the problem. Like, it's not like the characters are bad or unlikable. There's just nothing to them.
That's true. Predictable formula, but I didn't mind because I just wanted to see a big ape punch a giant lizard.
Yep.
I liked the use of some of the elements from the prior films. I thought it was fun, and it was exactly as advertised. A big monkey punches a giant lizard.
That he does.
So the human characters are completely terrible, especially the Millie Bobby Brown and her friend, the fat kid from Deadpool 2.
Yeah. And also Bellsnickel from Christmas Chronicles 2.
Yep. What a pull.
Yep. That's a Kurt Russell movie. I'm obligated.
There you go. We know what you like out there. They were awful.
Yep.
They did minimal. They weren't needed. You could have written around them.
Well, she was in the last one. She should have been in this one and Stranger
not
Things.
That's not how that works.
Stranger Things.
The father character that was bigger in the last movie did nothing.
The dad from Super 8, yeah.
Yeah, like, what are you doing?
Yep.
So from that perspective, they really dropped the ball.
Yep.
But from the big monkey punches big lizard perspective, I was fine with it. And I remember watching it, and I, spoiler alert, everybody's asking me, like, how's this going to end? I go, how does every Versus movie end? You team up and fight something worse.
That's right.
And that's exactly what you get.
I called it in the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. A lot of this was silly, but I did, like I said, I just wanted the monkey to fight the lizard.
There was the I guess you want to call it the cameo or the appearance of something that I didn't expect to show up,
which
and
was good.
I was excited about.
Yeah. Yes, that was very good. So, I mean, I think a lot of people love this just because they wanted a big action-y movie. They probably haven't had one. Some of them may have gone to the theater to see it, which they haven't been able to do in a while. And this is a good visual movie.
Oh, yeah. This for is like, sure. Like, get into IMAX, big screen, big sound. Watch.
Go deaf watching this.
Oh, yeah. Get that monkey punchins.
Get them monkey punchers. So, scores. Do you want to tell me your score before I do everybody else?
I do want to talk about one thing that bothered me immensely, and that is the amount of suspension of disbelief this film requires, because they seem to not care about very important like details in terms of distance and size, and things change a lot based on what they need the thing to do. And the time it bothered me the most was the special ships that they used to get through the reverse like gravity well that would destroy anything.
Right.
It's like, okay, all right. I'm like, that's not a problem.
Yep.
If you tell me that the ship do a thing, the ship do a thing. No problem. You've made that a rule. That's the rule of your movie. It's now...
It's canon.
It's canon now. However, when you tell me that this special vehicle that can withstand like an immense amount of force and can, no problem, we watch it happen, then is insta-crushed by a giant monkey because we need the one ship insta-crushed by a giant monkey later in the film.
Yep.
I have a problem with that because you've broken your own rule now.
That's fair. I didn't even catch that. But
that
you're
kind
right.
of yeah, that kind of stuff happens a lot in this film. Distance doesn't seem to matter. The fact that Kong's halfway across the city can see a girl doing sign language.
I feel like the size of him kept changing.
Oh, definitely.
Like the part where they were flying him in the net, I felt like he was too small.
Mm-hmm.
Versus when he was laying on the ship.
Uh-huh. Yep. A lot of problems with scale and scope and things like that.
So IMDb gave it a 6.5.
Okay.
Rotten Tomato Critics, 75%, 348. And this may have slightly changed again. This was newer when I wrote this. The audience score, 5,000 people at the time, 91%.
My God.
I know. I gave it a 6.5 because I think it did what I wanted.
Yeah.
And it was a popcorn movie.
Absolutely.
My wife and my mother-in-law both gave it an 8.
Holy crap.
I don't agree with that at all.
Holy crap. Sam says 4. I say probably higher than a 4. Not, I'd probably come in slightly under you at a 5.5 or a 6, somewhere
That's
in
fine.
There. Yeah.
And I mean, Sam, you're just as justified in your opinion because it didn't deliver on what you needed.
No. It definitely, there was nothing to grab onto. It was not like you could really relate to much, but it was cool to watch Kong hit stuff with a giant hammer.
Right. I think if a movie doesn't resonate with you, but it's still good, you should at least be like a 6
right.
or something.
Exactly.
Like, it's like they put in the effort, you had a good time. Sam saying it's a 4 doesn't bode well.
No. But you see, I think if you take a 4 and you take an 8,
mm-hmm.
you mush it together, you know what I mean? You're in that realm of approximately a 6,
mm-hmm.
which I think is about where you're going to... I think it does more well than it does poorly, but not much.
Sure. It's a weird franchise.
Yeah. So you started with a documentary. I'll end this with a documentary.
Whoa, double down.
Yep. 2019's Scary Stories.
Ooh, To Tell in the Dark?
It's about that, yeah.
Huh.
Watched it in September of 2020. It's 1 hour and 22 minutes long. It's a documentary directed by Cody Myrick, starring R.L. Stine.
What?
Yep. Bruce Covile. And Alvin Schwartz, which is all taken from archive. The movie summary is filmmaker Cody Myrick examines the history and the cultural impact of the horror book series Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Nice.
Yeah. It tells some cool stories. It's got some, because it was a pretty like, it wasn't like a heavily debated book, but it was like, people were like, is this a little much for children?
Right, because the artwork, especially.
The Stephen Gamble artwork. And Stephen Gamble, they could not get for this, because I guess he's pretty reclusive now. He doesn't do interviews and things like that, which kind of sucks, because I've never heard or really like seen much. I mean, I've seen his work, but other than that, not really heard much of him. I'd love to kind of see his take on artwork and how it works and everything like that, how he takes commission pieces and things, because his work is so disparate. He's done some really friendly, interesting-looking kids' books, and then he's done this,
right,
which is just pure nightmare fuel. But the story, like, there's nothing really in there besides just like, it feels like a dude who's like, aren't these awesome? Like, that's kind of it. The filmmaker had nothing really more to say than aren't these awesome.
That
and
sucks.
Yeah, it kind of stinks. He tells some cool, interesting stories about like librarians who were like, this is an important thing for kids to be able to read if they want to, because the idea of literature pervading is important. And a lot of these stories are, all the stories in Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark for the most part are old folk tales and urban legends and, you know what I mean? Like classic cultural stories. They're not things that he made up. You know what I mean? These are all old stories he went back. He was a news, like a journalist in a large extent, and did a lot of news work and looked into old archives kind of things. That was his actual job. And he wrote a lot of stories, spending a lot of time in the library, pouring back through old history and trying to kind of pull out interesting pieces. And that's how scary, if you look at Scary Stories, it literally has in the back a reference to where he found all the stories from.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really neat. Or like, it was this, but he admits he changed things, but the basic story is this folklore, this piece of, you know what I mean, like passed from mouth to mouth kind of tale. That's which cool. is really neat, but they really don't get into a whole lot of that. They try to use Alvin Schwartz's son to tell the story where like him and his dad had a rocky relationship until towards the end of Alvin Schwartz's life, which is like lovely, but it doesn't really do much to go on the thesis, which is, I presume to be, you know what I mean, the importance and the relevance of these books today, but he really kind of misses the mark on a lot of that.
Yeah, it sounds like he had an in, but it wasn't the strongest in.
Right. It was kind of like, kind of interesting, like, and the passion's fine. Like, I love Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, and you know what I mean? I do too, but I don't think I'd run right out and be like, I'm going to make a documentary about how much I love Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
You know, it's hard.
Yeah, it's there's not enough meat on the bone, I guess.
It's one of those things that works better in a short form, like an episode of something. Like, make a series about books.
Right, or do, like, a little internet special or, you know what I mean, or something like that. Like, and there's some cool, like, animation and, like, it gets, like, you can tell he's kind of buying time in this. It's only an hour and 22 minutes, but there's, like, literally he, like, interviews fans who, like, have a Scary Stories tattoo. And it's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, no offense to anybody who got the tattoo or something, but it's like, if I saw it or somebody posted on, like, Google or on their Facebook, like, hey, I have this tattoo of, you know what I mean, whatever story. Oh, that's neat.
Tell me the story of your tattoo.
Yeah, I don't need to know anything else. Like, cool, you have the cover of the book on your arm or on your calf or whatever. That's neat.
That's the kind of thing you take a quick little video and make a montage of to get to your next scene.
Exactly. It's not anything that needs to be, and it's like at length, you know what I mean? Like, I don't care about some person I've never met's experience with the books.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or like you said, you do that as your intro piece to lead in before your title credit comes up.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. I don't need to have an interview.
I remember hiding under the bed because I was so scared of those books. Or I remember like—
That's where the monsters are.
Yeah. I remember making my mom take the books away from me because I was too afraid of them. I mean, whatever. Like, you, like six of those stories with talking heads, chop, 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 chop.
Yeah.
Scary Stories, the documentary. But no, he buys a lot of time with that kind of stuff. It's like, it's a little eye-rolly, unfortunately. And I am, again, a fan of it. It's not bad. And but you have to be a fan of the books to be interested in this at all.
Right.
Like, it wouldn't make a non-fan a fan. And that's
unfortunate.
That's what a documentary should be doing. It's about
It should interest you.
Yes.
You should want to learn something about
it. You should be expanding the audience, not just keeping the same people who are already there.
Right.
Yeah. IMDb gives this a 6.1 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes critics, 11 critics gave it 82%, which I was surprised. I even went and read some of the reviews because I was like, really? And they were all like surprisingly thoughtful.
Weird.
Yeah. Audience, 50 plus people gave it 64%, and I'm coming in just a touch lower than everybody at 6 out of 10. Because again, I am a fan. If I was not a fan, I could see this being a 4.
Sure.
So you got to be a fan. But again, it's not doing enough. Like you said, documentaries got to do more heavy lifting than that.
I'm a fan of you.
Ooh. Then can I come out of this room?
No. Get back in that room.
Hmm.